Hey, it's Mark, and I'm back with another episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, we have on the pod Ken Nisambi, and he is from Nairobi, Kenya. And we talk about the trials and tribulations when he was 18 years old, and he essentially came over for what he thought would be a two-week vacation to see his mom. He landed here on December 25th, and he went from a very hot, humid place in Kenya to a very cold, rainy, snowy day here in the States. And what ultimately his mom decided to keep him here in Seattle, Washington, my hometown, that was like. And it was hard, you know, trying to meet people and be integrated and be away from all your family and friends back home. But he did it. And the guy is he's a very, very positive person. Everything he does, he sees the glass half full. He immersed himself in a local church and church group and started playing basketball and just reached out. And rather than think about what he was losing out on, he really focused on what he could gain. And so ultimately, he's been a permanent resident of the U.S., living in Seattle, Washington. And we just had a great time catching up. And I also want to throw a shout out to Doc Stewie. She's the one who put this whole thing together. And so we just, it's really fun. And we all have obstacles. And, you know, many of us have had to move. But when you're talking about whole countries and language and everything else, that can be a big challenge. And it was for him, but he overcame. Awesome. So remember, always, go to my website if you want, www.markpattisonnfl.com. You can find out about my climbs. I'm actually headed down to Vincent Massif in Antarctica on January 6th. I'm pumped up for that. And also, I've got a book coming out and an e-learning course. So I'm jacked about the different projects that are coming to fruition. Okay, so as always, this episode is brought to you by violetsareblueskincare.com. Check it out. It's great stuff. I use it every day. It's created by somebody I've had on the pod a number of months ago, Cynthia Besteman. She had to overcome her own adversity. She found her way, and she's doing great things for the world. So check it out, okay? So let's go talk to Ken. Here we go. Hey, everybody. It's Mark Pattison, and I'm back with another exciting episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week on the pod, we've got Ken Nisambi from Nairobi, Kenya. I should know how to say that because I've actually been there. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Mark. How you doing?
Yeah, you know, the thing that's exciting are two things. Number one, I have been to Kenya. I've been to Nairobi. I flew through there en route to Tanzania about 7 years ago, and it was complete chaos when I entered the airport. I didn't know if I was actually going to make my transfer, but I did. But I got just a little taste of looking out the window and seeing your hometown. The beautiful part is right now I'm beaming from Sun Valley, Idaho, all the way to my hometown is where you're at, which is Seattle, Washington. So you bunch of connection points here.
A lot. Seattle welcomes you, man. I'm glad you got to get a little taste of my hometown too. And you, when you described the airport, you just made me homesick because that's exactly how it is, chaotic. So it's I missed that.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I landed. It was like an open market inside the like a farmer's market you go to here, you know, where there's just people staring, selling their goods and services, and was just like wow. So, but anyways, I survived it. It was all good, and I found the people of East Africa to be so gracious and so amazing, and you know, grateful for the things that we were doing down there at the time. Actually, last year I went back and it was part of Water Boys, so helping to build water wells for the people of the Maasai tribe. But what I want to talk to you about, and we'll get into that in a minute, but, you know, I can't imagine, and one of the reasons why you're on the pod and somebody had recommended Doc Stewie, as a matter of fact, that you come on the pod is because I can't imagine what this must have been like for somebody who grew up for 18 years in Kenya, and I want to understand what your life was like that at that time, and then all of a sudden you come out to visit your mother, and the next thing you know, you're in America, and your life is taking a completely new direction.
Yes, yes. I could explain that. So it was supposed to be a two-week vacation. As I mentioned, we just came to visit my mom for the holiday season. At least that's what we thought. And I mean, America is the land flowing with milk and honey. At least that's how some of the rumors are. And I'm sure when you're visiting, they look up, they look at, they're like, hey, Americans are here. They love Americans.
Yeah.
So there's a lot looked up to because of what the TV show and what culture shows. So we were looking forward to coming, but we had no idea we were staying for the, I mean, I'm still here. Yeah. I'm still here in the hometown since I landed in 2001 of December. But it was a cultural shock because and I like that I can go back and forth. I like that I can go back and forth with you because you know culture in Nairobi, you know culture in Tanzania where you go to your neighbor's yard and you're able to get sugar. But then when we moved here, it was almost folks to themselves. And I was not used to that. And then the food was different. The weather, we landed in December in Seattle, raining nonstop. Oh, I had never seen snow. The only time I saw snow was in the Home Alone movie on TV or watching it back home. So there's so many things I had to get adjusted to. And the language, my accent is still thick. And the American accent, you know, just have to kind of switch some of the words that I say so that people could understand. Because we have the British English and you guys have the American English. And also adjusting from metric system too. So there was so much for me. And I'm still learning. Being here almost 17 years, I'm still adjusting. But I think my mom did the best thing ever because she created opportunity for me. And that's what I think people need to know about their great country of the United States is opportunity for immigrants. That's something that's real. And that's something that I have the job that I have right now because of everything that was lined up from education to the little side jobs that I did that led me to here. So I'm very fortunate.
What was your life like in Kenya?
In Kenya, my dad was a dentist and we had a pretty good life. I mean, in the sense of I grew up in Nairobi City. So a home filled with I have six brothers and three sisters, so nine siblings, and I was the second to last. So no one knew who I was, basically, because it's just a big span.
Yeah.
But we grew up in the main city, and I would say it was a pretty – my mom always taught us to work for ourselves and to work towards getting to the best level in life that you can be. She made sure that growing up in such a big family and I'll share this with you. I don't know. I feel called to share this just because sometimes I omit it. But my dad had two wives. My mom was the second mm-hmm. of those. And normally when you're the second wife, you almost get everything as like seconds. If the first family gets the biggest toys, you guys get the remainder. If the first family is done with the first house, you guys move into it after everyone's done. So we always got the hand-me-downs, and my mom made sure she got her own education and made sure she came back to make sure to break that chain from us guys getting hand-me-downs so that we had our own education, our own things first. But to this day, I don't have the strength to ask because I still don't understand the culture of why someone needs to have two wives and why someone would go. But that was mainly my parents' generation, and it's fizzling away slowly with my generation. But growing up in that was pretty interesting because you don't get 100% of your dad's, because he has to go back between two families. And that was just a concept that, I mean, now the older I am, the more I see some things that are coming out of it, and I'm like, man, that's as a result of this.
Yep. So are you just, again, we're talking about different cultures, right?
Yes.
And
yeah.
In the African, the Kenyan culture, is it typical in your parents' generation that the men would have two wives, or were they capped at that, or were there more than that, or what?
I think it varies from tribe to tribe. I have friends who have dads with 16 wives.
Wow.
The Maasai tribe. That's very common in that tribe. And then there's also religion. The Islam, there have a lot of Islamic friends who have parents with multiple wives and multiple children, depending on how you're able to sustain them. A lot of my dad's friends, so that's what I'm saying, it's definitely a cult, because a lot of my dad's friends, I'd say six of them, had, but they kept it to two. For some reason, they had two wives, mm-hmm. most of my dad's friends. But then it could be more than that. I mean, as you know, one, I'm a married man, and I know one lady is challenging enough.
Yeah.
And I'm challenging enough. So yeah. I can only imagine how my dad did it with two, yeah. and how my mom was able to go into something. Because I'm sure if you're a jealous lover, I mean, I don't know how you'd go into something, but some of it is sustainability. So,
yeah, I mean, look, I can't imagine this. I mean, you know, it's course management and, you know, I find myself now divorced and I'm not happy about that, but you know, it's just trying to manage multiple relationships at one time can be challenging for anybody. So,
absolutely.
So what was your dad like?
Man, my dad was an extrovert. My mom tells me I'm a lot like my dad. My dad passed away in 2005 from a heart attack in South Africa. He was a people person. I mean, he had three choirs and he'd bring them to the house on Saturdays and Sundays and like, hey, my mom, could you please whip up some meal? The folks are in town. Or like, so he would, our house was just like was like the spot to be, the community spot, because he was such a people person, loved people, smart gentleman. He studied and got his degree in Manchester United. That's why Manchester is one of my favorite teams in the English league. He was able to get high education. So my dad had the life that he tried to avoid for us guys. He grew up in the village. My mom grew up in, that's why I have mad respect for my parents. They had the life that most people think all of my college students thought that's the life that I had. And I played that card when I was in college. I'm like, if you guys think I'm from the village and that gives me cool points, then yeah, I will. But my dad came from the village, worked hard, came into the city, got his bachelor's, studied, went to the UK, and then came back to start becoming one of the greatest dentists in Nairobi. So he was a very hardworking person and believed in education. He made sure that every summer we picked up a book from the library, and I regretted it that I was like, did not like it then, but I see why he did it, to put us on this path of success. And I'm very fortunate that we had that as an example, because sometimes folks come in from back home and you're like, man, I'm the first one to go to college. I had such a standard that was set so high that my dad was a doctor, and trying to get to that level of knowledge and that level of education was always a challenge too. So yeah, he was a good man, and I miss him dearly.
Yeah, no, of course. I was in, as I said, the Serengeti out of Tanzania last year.
Yeah.
And I was in some of these villages that you're talking about. And
wow.
it blows my mind that the cultures can be, you know, on one hand, it's like going back centuries, like some of these villages. Right, their houses are built of sticks. The floors are
centuries. Yes,
centuries. The floors are dirt. They wear the custom robes that they mm-hmm. have. Their currency is a goat. You know, it's insane. But they are the happiest people that I could possibly meet. And we'd drop in there, and we'd have drones that were flying, and we're filming all this different stuff. And they thought it was like a UFO. Right, coming in, and it's just amazing. You know, we walk in there, we are wearing you know Western you know clothes, and they're wearing their garb, and it's just, you know, it was such a enriching experience for me to see just the differences in the way that we live.
Yes,
on one hand, we're so similar in so many different ways, and on the other hand, we're so different in many other ways. Right,
that's true.
So you talked about, you were in a tribe, right? Now, I know you mm-hmm. weren't in the traditional sense, like I saw out with the Maasai tribe in the Serengeti, but
yeah.
So you are part of this tribe, but you're living in the city. When I landed
yes.
in Nairobi, you know, as I was looking out the window, and of course I landed and I had to get off the airplane and we walked on the tarmac, I could see it was a very robust, big city. It wasn't
yes.
like some small village. So how does that work in terms of your tribe? Is it just something that you were... you were attached to, but you weren't obviously living in the bush, in the Serengeti. How does that work?
Your tribe, you're attached by your name. So my last name, Nsimbi, if you mention it to people, they know exactly what tribe you're coming from, exactly what region, exactly what clan, and exactly what animal you're associated with.
And what are, what is that animal?
You're going to laugh at me. It's the monkey.
The monkey? Cheetah.
I wish it was a cheetah or a lion, but it's a monkey. So we clown a lot. So it's a monkey. But it's the same... It's a royal. It's attached to also the royal, like if you go down in history. But maybe folks just said those tales because they wanted to attach it to the royal. But yeah, so it's always difficult for me. In fact, even within the setting, like you mentioned, the village and me coming from the city, I feel spoiled and I feel humble. Because when I come from Nairobi, we have running water, we have anything that we can access, internet, what you name it, I mean, electricity. And then I go visit my grandma and I'm humbled every single time when I have to go outside her house to the outhouse to squat in a hole that's dug up. And that's, my mom has asked her, could we please change this for you? We have money now. She's like, do not change my like this. I like this because this is what I'm used to. Like you said, some of the place where they cook, the little kitchen area, it's made of little wood and like thick mud that protects you from the sun. Like people are still living like that in this day and age. And when I go back, it takes me back to my roots and it reminds me this is where your mom came from. It's a very humbling like experience for me, and I'm very thankful every time. The chances that I got, God rest my grandma's soul in peace. She just passed away. It's been a year now, but at a good age of 80 something. But even at to her deathbed, she would go out to her little garden and just dig from the roots, eat from the roots. Because the city, the city is very close to being westernized. The city is, I was shocked when I went to Nairobi, I think in 2015, going to one of the stores and I saw 2% milk. I was like, what's going on with my cut? You know, I could not believe it because it's just becoming like slim diets, this and that diet. That was never the case when I grew up in Nairobi.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of cultural shock within my culture from city to village.
Yeah, no, I get it. So explain how your mother, so you're there for 18 years, right? So
yes.
From the time that you're born till you're 18 years old, till you thought you were going to come over for 2 weeks. Your mom is residing in Seattle, correct?
Seattle, yes.
Yep, my hometown. And
yes.
had to slip that in. And yeah, so how was it then that your mom was living here full time, yet you were, you know, in Nairobi? Who was raising you there, and how was she allowed to be here in the States? I mean, how did that whole thing go down?
That's a great question. So my mom left us with what you would call an auntie or a house help. You never address your house help by their name, so you call them aunties. So my mom was, she left us with a helper, a guide. So, and I was 16 when she left us, my brother and I, because my other brother was in boarding school, and then the rest had already like grown out and left because we are the three youngest ones and the rest are out, married, all that. So she was able to come to, and she would send money because a lot of immigrants, a lot of families that come to the States from foreign countries send money back to their families back home through Western Union, through relatives. And that's how she was able to sustain us. But she was working a nanny job here, and the dollar goes a long way back home, especially, in fact, that recently when I went back, one U.S. dollar is equals 100 Kenya shillings. One U.S. dollar would buy a pop over here. Back home, it would buy you the crate or pop. So I'm giving you like some, I mean, and you've spent some money back home. So, you know, yeah. So yeah, she was able to leave us with a maid and send money to her to make sure she paid for our school, to make sure we're clothed and also make sure that we're fed, and had aunties and relatives check in on us to make sure that, and the church raised us as well. We had a very good relationship.
What was that motivation that got her to, how did she get to the States? I mean, obviously she took a plane, but where was that in her being where she's going, you know what, I want to leave my home country, Kenya, and there's opportunity, and you have to go through all the immigration, you have to get a visa, you have to get all these different things, right?
Yeah, gotcha. You're right. So she got a lottery. Have you heard of the lottery term where folks win a lot? You put your name in and then you get a lottery and you're able to get a visa.
Yeah.
She was fortunate enough to get a lottery and she saw that opportunity because my dad had moved almost like semi-permanently to South Africa because his business wasn't doing good in Nairobi. So they were doing a long distance relationship. She went to South Africa and she was like, you know what? Based on how the economy is right now in Nairobi, I need to find, this is my mom, I need to find something for my children. I need to find a better stuff. I do not, she is so organized for her to think about like years ahead. She's like, I'm going to go, I'm going to find a job. First I'm going to apply for a visa, get the lottery, get placed at my relative's place, and then start from the ground up to build the foundation for my children to come. So when she landed, her first thing was turning paperwork for us because we were still under 18 to get visas for us. Because as long as you're a lottery person who's won a green card to the States, you can apply for your children who are under 18. So she did that.
Got it. So, now she sends for you. She's working as a nanny. She's making some money. She's sending it back to you guys. And now you come to visit over Christmas.
Yes.
And you come from this very dry environment year-round. And now you land in Seattle, and it's like typical.
Your hometown.
Seattle, in my hometown. And you said it's raining cats and dogs, and there's snow in the mountains. And, I mean, were you just an absolute culture shock?
Culture shock. Have you watched Cool Runnings by any chance?
I don't think so.
Okay, Cool Runnings is about the Jamaican bobsled team.
Oh, I have. Yeah.
You have. So you know the scene from the airport where they, they're stepping out and then they go back and put a whole bunch of layers of clothing?
Right.
That was exactly us. The three little African boys just landed in SeaTac Airport, snow all over the place. Cultural shock. Like, beyond. I was like, this is cold. And it just felt miserable. And then you get homesick instantly, you know? Because it's cold, so most folks stay inside over the winter. In Kenya, we just came from leaving, like 30 people just saw us off the airport in shorts and sandals, and they're about to go to the beach, go hang out in the sun. And in December, that's when you cook you do barbecues, chicken, you know. We're leaving that environment to come to the cold Northwest. So it wasn't the best picture for me, and that's why we were very upset. After 2 weeks, we're packing our bags, and we're like, oh, so thanks, Mom. It was really good to see you. I'll catch you. Send us some more tickets. We'll come back. And then she's like, you guys are not going back. We were like, excuse me? She's like, you're not going back. She's like, I miss you guys. I'm not, because she knew if she had told us that we were coming to stay, we wouldn't have not gone on that plane to the States.
So how does that work with the U.S. government? And I mean, you just can't come and stay. I mean, there's got to be some kind of procedure, or you're applying for a permanent residency. How does that work?
Exactly. Great question. So while we were here, she had applied our visa. So this is December 2001, December 25th, 2001. Our visas are normally given for 6 months.
Yeah.
So you could come visit for 2 weeks, but when the States grants your visa, it gives you 6 months visa. So while we were, she knew, she's such a brilliant lady. Within the 6 months visa, our green card was going to appear, it was coming in 4 months. So in 4 months time, the green card overrides the visitor's visa.
Wow.
And we became permanent residents while we were still here.
Lucky
so
you.
There was no Well, now I know I'm lucky. Before, I was just like, why did she do this to us?
Yeah. So you talk about, I mean, I have some experience because I've been to your hometown in Kenya. I know that the cultures are very, very different. And, you know, for you to go from living in Africa to now landing in Seattle, Washington, it's rainy. It's cold. You don't know anybody. You're saying, why me? And then,
yes. And
then there's this whole transition of learning the language, of learning the customs here. You know, what's your purpose? What are you going to do? I guess that would be the question is, what did you do? I mean, so now you're here, you're 2 weeks, you're pissed off because you think, you know, all your buddies are back in Kenya, right? And right. You're going, wait, how did this happen? But now she's not going to pay for a ticket to send you back, and you guys are here, right? So what was your next step? I mean, that's a lot for a young kid to overcome. It's one thing to, you know, like, hey, I moved within the city to a different neighborhood or maybe a different town within the U.S., but to go from that extreme culture to the U.S., it'd be tough for anybody.
It would be tough. I think I would have gone into a straight state of depression, because I was, when she broke the news down to us like a day or two before we were supposed to leave.
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out, LairdSuperfood.com.
Because I was, when she broke the news down to us like a day or two before we were supposed to leave, I was devastated. But the next week, the reason why I'm saying I could have is because the next week, because when we landed, we were able to be introduced to the church she was going to. And the church was a huge part of putting some money together for us to come to the States. They gave my mom tons of gift cards to go to all these different stores downtown so that we could shop for Christmas. So I knew that was part of it. So there was a youth group at the church that had folks my age. And one of the youth pastors came and picked me up like the next week, because my mom just called on to him to be like, yo, these guys are not happy. Could you just get them out of the, it was a one bedroom apartment because my mom was the only one staying there.
Yep.
Three boys from Kenya, sleeping in the living room because it's my mom's one bedroom apartment that she's been in for the two years she's been setting us up. So like, I'm like, what's going on? We've left our five-bedroom house in Kenya, the good life, you're sending money for us, you're sending amazing American goodies and clothes and all this stuff to come squeeze in a one. I thought like we downgraded.
Yeah.
But then I went and started playing basketball. I joined this community, the church group / youth group community, and it was a game changer. That once you get people, once you have folks, you can go. It was 24/7, 365, you either catch me at home sleeping, or when I wake up, I'm at the youth group until we're able to figure out school and stuff. The youth group, and then I became a youth leader because I was really at the cusp of, I was just about to turn 18 and the youth were like 16. So the youth leader was like, why don't you just become a youth leader? So we're able to go on trips, Oregon Coast, Nike, this, that, the other. So that is what saved. And I was able to also get a mentor from like who knew the culture and who was starting to teach me how to drive. So those are some of the things that happened in between. And my mind was like, I'm like, wait, all these things are happening. Like what's going on? So it slowly started to build. And I completely forgot about, not about going back home, but I was like, you know what? Let me try it. It's not too bad. And then summer hit in your hometown. And I was like, what is this? This is like back home. Yeah. So complete change.
Yeah. Well, you found your purpose, it sounds like. And you just had to be open to change and having new things come into your life and new people. And
I found my purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what church were you affiliated with? What part of town? And what school did you end up going to?
I'm glad it's a good thing you're from here. So when I said neighborhood, you'd be able to be like, oh, so the South End Rainier Avenue.
Yep.
The church is Rainier Avenue Church. It's right by it's on Rainier and Juno, right across from the fire station.
Okay.
That's on there. So that's Columbia City, Hillman City area.
Yeah. It's kind of down by Garfield High School down there, right?
Bam.
What else do you want to know?
That's your hometown. You have not forgotten us.
No,
good.
Not at all. And
I'm proud of you, man. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's the church I landed in 2001. I'm a drummer. So I joined the drum team and I've been playing for them ever since. And a school I graduated from, the University of Phoenix, with my Bachelor of Science in Human Services. But I also got the privilege and honor of being able to stay on the Seattle Pacific campus through a housing scholarship that one of the pastor's wives was able to get for me. So I went to Seattle Central for my prerequisites, finished at University of Phoenix, but my whole college life was on the Seattle Pacific University College campus because I lived there.
Yeah.
So that was the best case scenario. And in fact, I feel like they send me alumni packages from SBU because living there, I just got so into the community that I'm like one of them. I consider SBU my home just because it really, those were my growing years in college because I was able to interact with a lot of the students there as I was going to school at Central.
Well, while you're at Central, just up the street there is Dick's Drive-In and great cheeseburgers, fries, and chocolate shakes, right?
The deluxe cheeseburger.
You get a deluxe every time.
Wait, when's the last? You, how long?
I just don't forget. I can also tell you things about your hometown in Nairobi.
I bet you can.
Yeah.
My God.
Very observant.
You just brought up Dick's. You put a smile on my face.
Well, I always go up and I say I take a chalk, a fry, and a cheese, and say they know exactly what I'm talking about.
They know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, it's all good, good, good. So
that's right, exactly where Seattle Central is. Right, you just hit the. I'm telling you, it's like 2 minutes walk from Seattle Central.
Oh, you're around the 50-yard line.
I am.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell me what you're doing now.
Right now, I'm the youth programs coordinator for King County Housing Authority, and I serve on two boards with New Horizon Ministries and World Relief Seattle. I'm on the advisory council on World Relief because that's my passion, youth. And like you said, I found my purpose when my mom was able to. I was able to stay. I joined the youth group. I was like, this is the population I want to work with. This is the group I want to work with. And ever since, I worked for Boys and Girls Club. I worked for, I did Alaska Airlines to get my customer service for a while. And then I went back to working with youth. So I've worked with the homeless youth for 6 years at New Horizons. And then they invited me to join their board. And then World Relief, I have a passion for immigrants because of my story of coming to the States. And mine is actually not even as tough as some of the stories that some folks unwilling, we came willingly to come visit. That's privilege. There's some folks who come because they're coming from war-torn countries.
Yeah.
So I feel highly privileged to be on the advisory council and to be able to speak into, to be able to be a part of something that welcomes the folks here safely and settles them in homes. Like I settled, you know, just being able to be a part of, because I've been able to hang out with some of the folks that are settled in and just teach them. You want to learn bus routes. You want to learn how to drive as fast as you can because getting around or the bus system, whatever it is. But that's what I do right now. And I'm able to work with young men and women, K through 12, and just make sure that they have quality after school programs and also have an idea of what am I going to do beyond high school, beyond college. So I partner up with a lot of communities. Doc Stewie, amazing lady who's able to create resources for young folks to be able to walk them through and make sure that they succeed in life.
Yeah, well, she's always been a very amazing soul. I first got to know her back at the University of Washington when she was working as a tutor. With the academic program, and I was just one of a million, you know, kids going through there trying to figure out my way, and she was there helping out somebody else named Gertrude Peoples, and you know, she just was, she's always been that way, just, you know, looking to help people, and certainly, you know, it sounds like she's done that with you. On your end, I think it's just so amazing that you were open to change, you were open to not having a certain kind of mindset about, you know, being pissed off and being resentful to your mother, but rather you were open. You got involved in the community by going down to the youth center, You started playing hoops. You got involved in going to college. And then slowly, you know, it's such a, I mean, it just seems like such a natural fit with so many different immigrants coming and not knowing what to do on day one. They're just like, okay, where do I go? And having that resource to be there for them, to give them direction. And then slowly and slowly they become integrated within the community and off they go and they figure out their own deal. But, you know, we all need mentors. It doesn't matter what age you are. You're talking about K through 12.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We continue to need that from you're going into college. I've got two daughters, 19 and 22, and people in their 50s and 60s, right? And if you're not growing, you're dying.
That's true.
Yeah. So anyways, I continue to try to grow myself. And it's just amazing the amount of people that I get to be exposed to, like yourself. And I find it also so courageous that you were able to come over here and, again, successfully transition. And the bottom line is you're doing something very positive in the world. And you're giving back. And, you know, I call it paying
forward. Thank you.
Right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's because it was given to me, you know.
Well, it's the gift that keeps on giving, and it's just like, it's just, you know, we all have to figure out our way, and once we do, you know, you turn around and line and help the next person along.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful. I mean, like I was reading, I wish I get to do some of the accomplishment that you've done. I mean, you touch a lot of people, Mark, like, and that's why I was excited to talk with you, and just because I want to keep growing. I want to get to the peaks that I've seen you, like, climb. Like, I want to reach as many young people, as many people in general, to share some of the giftings that I have, and also to make sure that folks have access. Like, you're creating access by what you're doing in Tanzania. You're creating access by your podcast, by the people that you reach out to and talk to. Like, folks are changed by just hearing what you. So I'm appreciative of that, and that's why. It was an honor for you to set this up for me. I was like, man, it really is a privilege. I mean, talking to someone who's like highly respected. Doc Stewie gave you like raving reviews. I was like, man, I hope I get a chance to talk with Mark and just kind of go back and forth and see what's going on. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. You saying those kind words, you know, I think, I didn't put that much thought into it at the time when I came up with this whole idea of the name of Finding Your Summit. But, you know, the further I've kind of got into all this, it's really metaphorical. And for me, I've kind of defined it, in my life at least, as by the decade. And it seems like there's not just one summit. There's multiple summits.
Yes.
And it's keeping on keeping the reach. And I, you know, at one point in my life, I was trying to become a professional football player and a college football player. And that was kind of my life then. And then I had family, and then there was business, and then climbing mountains and doing podcasts. And so things keep evolving and changing, and I'm not where I want to be today, but I know there's this great things ahead down the road. And that's why I keep reaching and keep trying and keep, you know, pursuing these different goals and dreams. And it sounds like you're doing the same thing. And along the way, you end up, you know, actually affecting change and changing people's lives. And it's a beautiful thing when you get something back, you know, and I'm sure you get the affirmations from some of these different kids or their parents that come back to you and talk to you. And for me, I get email from Doc or from somebody else that says, hey, Mark, this episode really touched me because of blah, 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 blah. I went through something very similar.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, if you don't mind. I just turned 35 and celebrated this past Sunday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. 35 feels good, and my motto is 35 and just trying to stay alive. I'm doing more than that. My friends are like, you want to do more than just stay alive? Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm going to change my motto, but it rhymes.
Yeah.
So anyway, so at 35, I'm like, because you mentioned, it's funny, you mentioned that you've achieved big. Some people would stop at achieving being an NFL player. That's in itself, that would stop there. But you went, like you said, you want to keep climbing your peaks. So that's impressive that you're not stopping. you don't even look like you're anywhere done to what you want to achieve. But my question to you is, because I'm at 35 and I was like, what's my next step? When did you know, like from the NFL, like what guided you to move on to the next step? Because that's one thing that sometimes I struggle with. I'm like, should I stay here? Should I continue? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? What helped you with that?
Well, I think all these things that I've done, you know, college football into the NFL, then starting these different businesses that have been successful, climbing mountains, they're all connected in a way. And I don't wake up in the morning and look at the mirror and say, you know, you're one impressive dude, you know, because it's my life. And it's just,
right.
You know, I happen to be given certain talents, and those talents allowed me to go down the football path. And I just kept going and going and going. But what drove that was my, maybe it was fear of failure, and that, and so I ended up working out harder than anybody. Now, I'm not saying that there weren't other guys that working out as hard as I was, but there was nobody who worked out harder. You know, when the lights turn off, I'm still the guy running up and down the stairs. And I've kind of taken that same approach throughout my life. And as I look back on my life, I'm not talking about how you or somebody else sees my life, but I really don't think I've accomplished that much. I know there are certain things that are out there that I've done that many people can't, but there's a lot of things that I can't do, you know, become an astronaut or you know, I haven't been on boards and stuff like that. And so I think the whole, every day I wake up, I have a vision board. I have one in my refrigerator, and I have one in my bathroom. And I have exactly what I want to accomplish and how I want to get there. And so I have constant daily reminders of where I'm trying to go. Now, knock on wood, like on climbing the seven summits and trying to become the first NFL player to do that, as I look at it now, I've done five mountains. I've got two to go. I'm going to Antarctica in January and then climb Mount Everest, you know, after that. And then people have said, well, after that, are you done? No, I'm going to go ski to the North Pole and I'm going to ski to the South Pole. And am I done after that? No, I'm going to go climb the highest peak in every state. And as I look at that, and as I keep kind of going out and like resetting the goal, things just keep coming. Beautiful things keep coming. You know, I've started a newsletter. I've written a book. I've got these podcasts going. There's public speaking. You know, these things that I never would have thought I could possibly imagine have come into my life because I just keep knocking on the door and keep kicking the tire. And that, for me, has been the secret.
You're going to have me go in my fridge right now and go put up my vision board, because that makes sense. That's helpful. That's when you can see where you're going and when you have it as a daily reminder. So, wow. Thank you.
It's hard to see where you're going if you don't know where you've been. Too,
no, right? that's true.
Yeah. So anyways, that's my two cents. And it seems like, again, I just... Every day, it's metaphorically speaking again, but it's literally one step in front of the other until you get to the top of the mountain. But when you get to the top of the mountain, you realize you've only gone halfway. You got to turn around and safely come all the way back.
Right.
And then you reset the next goal and where you're going, and you do it all over in a new adventure. And it sure sounds like that's been your case, you know, in your life.
It has.
Yeah.
It has. But now I want it with like definition, because I feel like I'm getting to like slow down and get comfortable. I don't want to get comfortable, but at the same time, I just don't want to move for the sake of moving. I want to make sure that I have a path, because before I got this job, I was in the final stages of the Seattle firefighting. I passed all the interviews, passed all the tests that I needed to do, and I had two options: the job that I have now that has 8-hour shifts, or Seattle Fire Department, which was going to be, I mean, whatever shifts that they give me. And this one, I work with young people, population that I have control of. And of course, the Seattle Fire Department, the reason why I did that is because of how tender they worked with the homeless population when they came to my drop-in floor. Whenever I'd call them for an OD or alcohol poisoning, they'd come in, and the young people look at firefighters in a more safe way than they look at the police. So I liked that, and I pursued that. But then I was left with these two choices, and I went with the King County because I have a population of choice that I've decided to work with.
Yeah, and certainly when you have change and you go forward and do something slightly different, you can always change it back. Right. Sometimes people always talk about, you know, I'm scared of change. Well, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily permanent.
Don't no, that's why it's changed. Time. You could change it back. Yes.
Yeah. So listen, I'm going to wrap this up. It's been great to talk to you. And if people want to learn more about your story, where can they find you?
People can find me on Instagram. People can find me on Facebook.
What's your handle?
Facebook is my first and last name. And that's actually going to give them a lot of details.
Okay.
Because there's a series that I did about the misconceptions that people do about my home country. So it's all, the pictures are all on there and documented.
That's awesome. And that is Ken Nassim B. And we're going to put that in the show notes. Okay, buddy?
All right.
Listen, hey, thank you so much. It's been very enlightening and informative. And again, I really throw a shout out to Doc Stewie for recommending you. And, you know, it's been great talking to somebody from Seattle, my hometown.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark. And good luck with the two summits left. You're going to do it.
Thank you, buddy. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.